Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
All of our files are free and will remain free. If you like the show, you can show support by donating $1 to help with expenses. Just use the PayPal link on our webpage. Thanks.
And welcome back to the second part of our talk here with a Native American elder on, well, now we're going to move to the ancient stuff.
Yeah.
And your book, when I look at the symbolism, the figures here, right? For example, here on page 77, nice number, we have the 20-day signs and Aztec names and symbols of the sacred counts. It strikes me how similar this is to Egyptian. Just to reiterate the point about Plongeon, because they too had these symbols that are multifunctional. Like it's very often like a depiction of some kind of animal. Not always. I mean, you have
moon. Al?
Yeah.
May I?
Yeah, Lupin.
What you're looking at is a software program.
Right, right.
And it's very cleverly designed so that a 9-year-old will not confuse the 13 digits with the 20 other digits. They are alligators and dogs and eagles. And so they have very cleverly made it easy for a 9-year-old to learn this program. Yeah, very clever.
Well put. It makes sense when you put it like that.
Not only that, but they do so many things with it. It names the days, it names the years, it names the people, the errors. They use this for their accounting system. And it's strange that that should be the shell, that particular mathematics should be the shell of our speed of travel, our speed of rotation.
Right.
Among many other things.
Yes.
Yeah, I see a connectivity going on there that it's hard to get your mind around because it has so many different aspects and they connect in such different ways. But I could, if I had a 13 pass, I could walk to Pluto. If I could turn that into 13 something, I could walk my way all the way to Neptune.
Yeah, whether you mean you would have the route, you would have the GPS instructions to get there.
Exactly. And that's what, like, I can see that if I can get this guy Cliff High to take some of this data, what I've done is, and he's into this too because he understands the importance of language.
Yeah.
What I'm doing is trying to translate this into different language so that from the language, I get back more information. And so by translating one thing into the motions or something of another thing, I can describe it in different ways. And then that data will tell me things that I didn't know before. Like,
but tell me this. Would you say that the Mayan calendar is exclusively Mayan, or did all the native Indians share the same basic system? They may have had some different representations, of course, like language.
Excellent question. Yes. Now head on that one, Lauren. This is the story of Chief Seattle, for instance.
My answer to that is this. This is a relic. This is knowledge passed down from someone who knew these things, and they knew it all. That it's not an accident that these things turned out to be, what we're just finding out on the daily as the news comes in, or science reports comes in. Yes, it is that figure. Well, how can that coincidence be? No, they had a knowledge of the universe that was passed down to us. And I can only imagine that this existed prior to the last ice age. But they knew this mathematics, and just as it's described for us in Sumerian terms, they had a technology to deal with it. Look up that Dorchester pot. Look at that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, better. So more or less the Mayan version is what has survived for us today. It's just a Mayan version of it.
Well, you know, actually, I think the Zapotec and the Olmec and the Maya were all using this kind of a calendar.
Right.
And to my mind, this is survived from a previous time.
But I've heard the Hopi Indians has an advanced calendar. Is that the same or is that something else?
I beg your pardon?
The Hopi, I don't know how you say it. Hopi Indians?
Yeah.
The Hopi. Yeah,
yes.
The Hopi.
Oh, they have a.
Is that the same calendar or is there something else?
No, they don't. They, you know, I worked with the Hopi for a time, and you're not going to go into their kivas and learn what they know. They're very closed there. So I'm not an expert on how they use the calendar. I do know they are, they're very closed in that regard. They keep their ceremonies and their knowledge secret. So
actually, it's interesting. I don't know if I mentioned it in the last interview we did, Lauren, but I had a encounter with Joni Mitchell about that and one of their ceremonies around the quickening. But they are interesting, and they do invite some people into some of that knowledge. But I it's obvious Lauren understands that they don't give you the details. Let's just say. But we are in the time of the quickening, and that is something that is integral to their calendar system, and it's symbology that appears in interesting ways. So, for instance, the quickening is really about our adoption of the electromagnetic system and its impact on humanity and the Earth over the next little while, and that started in the 90s. And Joni Mitchell was at a ceremony that initiated that, the beginning of the quickening, and she told me about it. I mean, I'll talk about that some other time, but that's just an offside story. But anyway, yeah, they have some interesting topics, but I have never seen anything about their calendar system numerically, mathematically whatsoever. But they speak in symbology, which is essentially just shapes, right? That appear in astounding ways. And we can get into that another time, but that's just to add to what Lauren is saying. I'll shut up now.
No, I just made an observation of how similar it was to Egyptian, because they too had multifunctional symbols that they used.
Well, I just shared with you 1,400 years of continuous contact. I think that case is, we can close that case.
Yeah, but do you think it's like a common source, or do you think they also visited each other in the aftermath?
Okay.
That's the big question, right? Because even if it's a common source, they may not have had contact and it develops very separately. But like you say, there is evidence of stuff in Americas that are brought over from the rest of the world. And hang on.
There are so many things.
One more point. There's also the opposite. There's evidence of America's things from America's in the rest of the world. You mentioned the cocaine in the mummy. And we might as well also mention, for example, stuff that Vikings had, notwithstanding cannabis seeds. There's no evidence that Vikings went to India. But if it's true what you say, that you've had cannabis, if not forever, at least for a very long time, obviously it has to come from America, where so much other stuff came from, like maize, you know, corn, that they brought to the Roslin Chapel. So this indicates mutual contact even after the big fall during the Ice Age.
I'm under the impression that they were coming and trading continuously. Al, there are so many things about Maya cosmology that are just identical to the Egyptian belief.
Right.
Like, for example, the Pharaoh is supposed to be reincarnated in the skirt of Orion. Well, that's exactly the same place where the Maya twins resurrect their father from the carapace of a turtle shell, the constellation they call Ak, which is really the Orion Nebula. Pakal is headed there. That's where he's supposed to go.
Mm.
Now, why would they both have this belief that their leader is going to reincarnate in the skirt of Orion? And that's just one of many things.
And it's very specific.
Yes, it is. Yes,
well, it's not just a specific location. It's the exact same myth with different names.
Hmm.
Hmm. Yes, and we can go on and on with that one, too, because, you know, all of these stories that Western tradition have thought were their own, particularly the ones in the Bible or the Torah, we find that those are just the retelling of previous stories.
Mm.
And the same could be said of the legend of the city of the gods of Teotihuacan. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
That is a retelling of a story from Sumeria. It's the retelling of the story of the Agigi creating.
Hey, slow down, Lauren. What is that story? Tell us that story as it from the perspective of Teotihuacan, and then correlate it to the Sumerian. Give us the details on that.
Very well. They would give us the idea that the world has ended, and the fires have gone out, and the gods assembled there at Teotihuacan to do something. And they finally conceived that one of them would have to die to give his life to create a new world. And they were all too weak to do that. But one old man came forward, and he jumped in the fire and created, and I think maybe some others followed him and brought this world into being. But that is the same story that the Sumerians tell us of when they were rebelling against working in the gold mines.
Yeah.
They realized they needed a worker. They realized they needed a genetic code, that someone would have to sacrifice themselves. And one of them did that. But it's a retelling of that same story. And no one has pointed that out, to my knowledge anyway. But it's like the story of in the Bible where I don't know whether the guy's name is Balaam or something like that, and he's riding along on his beast of burden, and the animal stops, and he starts kicking the beast to go on, and the Lord opens up the mouth of the beast, and he speaks, and he says, "Why are you kicking me? Can't you see the sword of the Lord hanging over the path?" Is there anything strikes you strange about this story?
Apart from a speaking horse?
that one too.
Well, the rebellion against the labor, let's say.
Well, how about if I told you the story this way? We were driving down the road in one of those Tesla kind of thing deals, and the vehicle just all of a sudden stopped.
Right.
I started kicking the computer and bitching, and Siri comes on and says, "Why are you kicking me? We tripped an electronic beam, and if we proceed, we're going to get disintegrated." Now, which is believable to you?
Well, obviously, the last one everybody gets in these days.
Well, this is the way that when I read the translation of Sitchin, mm-hmm. and then I read the translation of some of these other guys, they're telling the story from what they conceive in their paradigm. Mm. I like Sitchin's version a whole lot better when he's describing Gilgamesh encountering the electric eye beam and tearing up the machinery and the guy who's supposed to be guarding the place. I like that version of the story better than the one that just does not explain the facts, you know, as played out.
How old do you think these stories really are? Because there is a schism. Excuse me. There is a schism in the ancient research circles that some want to go back millions and millions of years until we encounter something truly advanced. Whereas others say, no, no, it's sufficient to go back.
Like 12,000 years.
20,000 or whatever. Yeah, 12,000.
Well, they say 12,000. Yeah,
yeah.
Listen, in what I have here, I can go back, I think, 471,000 years. Is that right? 471,000? Yeah, I believe.
Well, that's
the King's.
Well, that's going to be well within mainstream time scales, because Homo sapiens officially has been around unchanged for 300,000 years. They always backdate it and backdate it. So, and we know Cremo and everything. So I believe it's millions of years. But officially, you're on safe grounds if you say 300,000. So 400,000 isn't a big stretch within official mainstream paradigm.
Oh, it's recorded history.
Yeah.
The real question, Lern, is how long do you think it goes back?
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying not to. If I impose my paradigm on the evidence, it will get pretty cloudy. The best that I can do is say that, hey, this is what it says. And do I buy that? Do I not buy it? Well, as I get more data, some things get contradicted, other things do not.
Right.
And the very fact that I have recorded data that goes back that far, I'm not making it up. I could make up something, but that's barely as good a story as the one I dig up. So
right.
I'll go with the evidence that I have. And I don't say, here, believe this. That's up to you. And, of course, I want to retain that. I want to be able to wake up tomorrow and say, nah, I don't believe that shit. No, I ain't buying it. I have that right every day. Huh? But I can't discount evidence. And to ignore it seems to be foolish and rich.
Would you say the evidence points more in terms of millions of years? Or are we talking, was it 400,000 you said?
You know, I'll have to get out my book here. I think I can only speak back about 471,000 years. 445,000. Yeah. I can't describe how things were before then.
Well, in your book, you do have a timeline that begins 85,000 years ago with a meteor crater event.
Well, yeah, that's like yesterday.
Pardon?
That's like yesterday.
Yeah, yes, that's yesterday. And the Neanderthals.
From the Dorchester pot, I think it would take longer than that for that to form. And so, yes, I believe that there has been civilization here, and a very high civilization. They knew what our universe was. They knew it all.
But, you know, some detractors, they try to dismiss the ancient anomalies with the go-to excuse, aliens. What do you think about that?
Well,
if there's something ancient and advanced, it's always aliens in their mind. What do you say?
I would like to be able to dismiss aliens altogether, Al. But as I told you, among my son's mother's people, those are the stories handed down.
Mm-hmm.
Among stories that these cuneiforms tell, if we are to believe them, they talk about technologies, and they do it in such detail and in ways that nobody could invent this. Nobody could be so accurate in the way things would turn out.
Mm.
The things that we learned about the ruby laser and about the formatting crystal, silicon crystal for electric chips.
Smartphones and stuff.
Conductors. Yeah. What about the crystal skulls? I have to ask you about that. Do you have any take on that?
That is totally That's outside of my realm. I'm not a crystal.
Okay, good. What about...
Before we move on, I wanted to point out, just within the Mayan calendar, right? I mean, we have long cycles.
Yeah.
We have the Hablat, which is 12,800,000 base 20 units.
Okay. And a unit is...
Base 20. So you got 20 times 12,800,000, or sorry, 12,800,000,000. Those are days.
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive if you're talking years. If you're talking seconds, it's not that impressive.
No, it's not seconds. Those are days, right? So,
oh, days.
So
okay.
365.25. So that's cycles that are 700,889,801.5 days long, or years long.
Jeez.
And that's not the accurate number because, you know, if you divide it by 365.25, you're still not dealing with the quarter hours that are in that,
right,
that whole system too. So, but that's the longest cycle. And then you've got the Alu, which is 64 million, the Kinchil, 3,200,000, Kabal. When Lorne finally gets around to those numbers, look out. But he's dealing with so much already just in the base notes, right, which is those base numbers, which are embedded in the calendar system, that many listeners are probably familiar with just on the basis of the fact of the 2012 phenomena. Let's actually get to that, Lorne, if you don't mind, guys.
The new date?
Yeah, like let's run through a bit of a thought experiment on how you came to your conclusions around a potentially more accurate date. And then we'll talk about that date a little bit.
And obviously, he has to disclose that date because people are sitting on the edge of the chairs, want to know that. Right? So,
don't take it away, Lauren.
The floor is yours, Lauren.
Mm. Okay, I really don't know where to start here. Like what I did was I took the figures that the experts were giving me and I started playing with them. And I realized what they had done. But as I went through the literature, I realized that they had forgotten about the days thrown out. And if you divide their figure of 5,125 years for a world age, you will see that it is 52 units of 360 days. And they simply forgot about the days that were thrown out. Well, when you do the math, you realize that it's not only those 5 days each year that they have thrown out. Can you still hear me?
Yes, go on. We're listening.
So there are 5 days for 52 years would be 260 days. And then you also have this quarter day. And one quarter day times 52 years is 13 whole days. So you have 5,200 years, which is 100 units of 52. Mm-hmm. So you wind up there with 27,300 days that they have left out of the world age.
Wow.
And if you do the math on that, you realize that that's 75 years. And so if you add that 75 years, it turns out to be 5,200 years, which works out perfectly in the fractal. And, you know, has it ever occurred to you, is interesting, Stacy, that they calculated a mile to be 5,280 feet?
Yeah, this is where the math starts to wear all these different hats. This is the rabbit hole. So,
and that same phenomenon with 80 feet or 80 years or 0.08 day, that just keeps happening like crazy. And here's one for Al. you were talking one day and you asked about someone if they had ever had any dreams in their sleep that guided them on.
Right.
And I was headed for the couch one night here, a couple months back. And I was already going into dream time. My head hadn't hit the pillow yet, but I was headed for dream time. Mm-hmm. And a voice in my head said, "Are you still there?" And I said, "Yeah, what's up?" And the voice said, "I got a message for you." And I said, "A message?" "Yeah, from your subconscious." I said, "Well, what is it?" And the message said, "Well, you know that 0.08 day or 80 feet or 80 miles or 8 hertz or that you've been encountering in the research? I said, yeah. I said, well, take a look at the fractal of 13. So I got unawake, or I got awake real quick and went and wrote it out. And I divided 13 into 6.5 and then into 3.25 and then into 1.625 and then 8.125. Ah, that's half of phi. Mm. And that's all in the fractal of 13. And so I thought, this is great. This is just great. So I don't know, a week or two went by and I was headed for my head hadn't hit the pillow yet. And just up for a lark, I said, are you still there? And the voice said, yeah, it's pretty neat, huh? I said, yeah, it was. And the voice said, well, maybe you better look a little further down that road. So I scrambled up and did the math again. And I did this reductionist theory on the number 13. And I noticed something very strange happening with the numbers. And of course, this doesn't surprise me because I've really run into some things hard to wrap your mind around. But anyway, at 26 reductions, I was down to 0.0000002. And so the 27th reduction was 1 millionth. And I thought, well, that's remarkable. 13 reduced 1 million times that's 1 millionth of 13. I still can't wrap my head around it, but the point that I'm trying to make is that there are more to these numbers than we, you know, we have this bandwidth of about, I don't know, 7 or 8 things that we can hold in consciousness at one time without dropping one of them to pick up another line of thought. And so we're like monkeys, really. I mean, we can... We're like kittens.
Yeah.
We can drag a string in front of us and get our attention and, you know, our mind's gone. So the way we were engineered, the bandwidth that we were given, we're not allowed to get that dangerous. And this has to do with that whole story of the Tower of Babel. And I don't has been explained sufficiently yet, but the role of language in this, the role of language is there's more to that than meets the ear.
Absolutely. I need to comment this back to you, Lauren. And what I'm going to say now is going to be removed from the show. I'm going to tell you this from a personal perspective, but I don't want it out there. It's going to be edited out. Goes back to Egypt and then Atlantis. But here's the thing. The school, the normal school in society, treats numbers like slaughter factories treats animals. Yes, you can eat animals, but that's obviously not their only value, right? And the same with with numbers. Mathematics, the quantitization of things isn't everything. There's also a quality to numbers, to relate to those numbers through non-rational approaches, like creative stuff, you know, music, colors, whatever, just studying the shapes of the numbers. And then we get it's like a system, and when you use that, every number in the world, every mathematical operation, every manifestation of numbers like sound, vision, anything can be used to account for that. And you see a lot of shortcuts that are not logical or rational, but they come out as the same way as if you did it as a rational mathematical operation. A basic example of that is what's called Pythagorean reduction, which is when you have a huge number, if you reduce it to its core, like three.
I use that.
Yeah, right. So that's a shortcut. So there's two different ways of operating. It's the logical right brain way and it's the intuitive left brain way. So yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I would love to sit down with you and, you know, on a personal level. And we could maybe exchange something, right? But that's not possible, you know, the way we're rigged here with microphones and stuff. So that's just something I wanted to throw in there so you understand that I understand where you're coming from.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
You hit upon an idea there that I'm inclined to believe that our whole thinking is upside down. That at one time there was one language that connected all of these things.
Exactly.
And when we started taking it apart and separating it into different things that we consider to be different elements, the whole sense of it falls apart. But there was an understanding of how geometry and numbers and colors and sound waves, how these things all relate.
Yeah.
And we were denied that at one point, perhaps because we are fearsome creatures. Well, I won't go down that road, but yes, I believe what you're saying.
And even plants. I know the ancients were classifying plants in accordance with the same key that they used for vibrations in general, like, of course, you have 7+5, right, which is the basic tone scale or the piano. And the thing is, you can put what we call, in English, you, when you say the elements, you're talking about physical, we call it base material. But I think you call it the elements, which is like helium, carbon.
Yeah.
All that stuff can also be classified at the same key in the vibrational scale. You can do the same with, like I said, plants. You can do the same with the... You know, the spine is like a piano,
mm-hmm.
where you have whole notes and half notes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fractals, right? Fractals are everywhere. That means that we live in a universe which is as above, so below. It's called, what's it called, when things repeat itself like that?
Conformal symmetry.
Yeah. It's divine symmetry, basically. So that's great. But let's move on in the show. You mentioned yourself, Sitchin, and the Babylonian stuff. What is your take on the Stones of Destiny?
Well, that is crucial because, listen, this technology that they are talking about, they talk about medical technology there that can not only sustain life, but rejuvenate life. Doing things, shooting electricity or plasma through these various gemstones and creating vibrational waves that do all sorts of things. And I do believe that that had something to do with why we wanted to go into Iraq and perhaps even some other places. I do think that they think they can weaponize some of this stuff, and indeed perhaps they have and can.
I was going to ask you what you thought of Eric von Däniken. Are you in with Eric von Däniken?
Like I told you, I would like to tell you that everything you see is a Nazi or a Department of Defense, that it didn't come from another world. It came from right here. I would want to tell you that. But at the same time, I've got all of these accounts of, written in clay. Thousands of years old that tell another story. My son's people, they tell another story. People everywhere, I've just been collecting evidence so that I could make an informed decision. It's very arrogant for us to think that we are the only ones, but until I see somebody from another world, I'm going to be very suspicious.
I mean, everybody agrees that the universe is teeming with life. The big question is, did we have our own advanced civilization, or are we like children and everything we got came from someone else? And even if people think it came from someone else that were more advanced than us, it doesn't solve anything. It's still the chicken and the egg, because they, at some point, became advanced, right?
True.
So the more spiritual or theosophical approach to this question, I mean, the more materialistic approach is, yes, it's physically spermognostics, spermogenesis, that, yeah, it came from someone else. But the more theosophical spiritual approach is that the so-called aliens are not aliens, they are like cosmic masters, and that we are materializing into the universe. I mean, in the universe, when people are coming in, it's not just that someone is coming from somewhere else, because again, we need to have come up with an origin, right? Yep. But if things are materializing into being, then there can be it can still be a question of contact. It's the same with we talked about earlier in Americas versus the rest of the world, right? Do they have a common origin? Fine. But also they had contact after that. And it can be like that with aliens too. We can have, everyone can come into being by materialization gradually. And there can also be communication in addition. So these are just some curveballs I'm throwing out there. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but it's just so you see where I'm going with this question, and you feel free to answer it exactly as you want.
What was the question?
Yeah. Yeah. So the question was, are we basically, did we have our own advanced civilization, or did everything we got come from someone else? Because you have the, obviously, the elongated skulls in South America that many people think are a result of hybridization with aliens. And some think, no, even though there may be aliens and we may have had contact with the aliens, we actually hail from an advanced civilization. Egypt is a fragment of that. India is a fragment of that. And maybe Maya too. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I tell you what, I have this, what Stacy calls an animistic approach to all this.
Mm.
But the older I get, the more I'm inclined to believe that, just like this space guy dancing in the wind, that we are a frequency. And just the same way that quarks and bosons pop into this world from another dimension, we pop in here too.
Mm.
And we experience life for a while, and then we pop out. And it's a frequency. Mm. This is all governed by a mathematics and a technology, and I can easily see where the whole thing is programmed.
Could we call it a divine algorithm?
Well, yeah, you certainly could. You certainly could. You know, I remember one time going to, I was in San Francisco, and somebody took me to this place, and I don't know how they excited the light, but they shot the light through a ruby crystal, a laser beam. And they were scoring these giant fiberglass cylinders. And after I watched them do this for a while, I went up and I looked at one of these cylinders, and you could walk around the cylinder, and the person inside the cylinder would dance and talk to you just as if they were moving. But it is all refracted light, and the light was cut by a computer program, photograph, just that pixel and that bandwidth, and I saw, whoa, this is a representation of a moving person, and it's all the technology to create us is all here, and all somebody has to do is have that technology, and you can create a world.
Right.
And are we that? Stacy, you remember the cartoon I sent you?
No, but the thing that jumps to mind right now is the name of BlackRock investment firm in relation to the Sumerian tablets and the technology that is described in those tablets.
Well, I don't know whether you noticed, but the gal is asking my cartoon character if he thinks this is a hologram. And he says, nah, this is totally three-dimensional. But on the wall, you see his shadow. And it's the shadow of a chimpanzee holding up six fingers.
Yeah, I was thinking the simulation theory, actually.
Well, listen, it could all be simulated. I can't deny that. And somebody...
But maybe that's a language problem, right? What does that even mean? Yeah, we may be simulated, but it doesn't mean we are in a computer. We may be simulated by the same principle as a computer would do it, but it's another medium than electricity in a computer, if you see what I mean. So it may be.
Well, I think that this goes back to the whole electric universe concept and the fact that we're a frequency, right? Which
right.
is the linchpin of what Lauren is saying.
I think
you're. Am I right, Lauren? Am I pointing out the right thing there?
No, frequency is a better word. But tell me this, Lauren, because people want to know.
Yeah.
Associated with cycles ending and new beginning are always catastrophes. And in this Judeo-Christian culture of ours, people are brainwashed by thinking that there's no such thing as cycles. It begins bad and primitive, and then we end either in a complete enlightenment or a total collapse. And so especially the collapse fear is ingrained in Christian people. So you saw many people were panicking in 2012, right? Ridiculous. But not because it's not ridiculous that something bad would happen, but I mean, how can you overcome it by panicking? Anyway, so
I think anybody who's into Dan Burrish probably thinks we're on timeline two right now. That's probably what they think.
On the other hand,
hang on, let me just phrase the question. So the question is basically, people will listen to this. We are long gone. We are long gone. But prior to 2087, someone will listen to this. Now, can you give them? I don't know, your thoughts about what they can expect? What does the lore say?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he can.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right, well, in the Aztec calendar, the symbol for this age that we are in is the symbol motion or earthquake. And that would indicate that this world age ends by earthquake. But in the Chilam Balam, he mentions... And I say he, I'm talking about Lord Jaguar, the Jaguar priest, and he what is going to occur.
Oh, wow.
And he tells us that it will be 13 cycles, zero katoons, zero tunes, zero winnows, zero kins since the beginning of the great cycle. And four Ahu, three Kang Kin, ninth Lord of the Night, moon will be 8 days old. Third lunation in a series of six. What is to happen? The sky is then divided. The land is raised. And then there begins the book of the 13 gods. Then occurs the great flooding of the earth. Then arises the great Itzam Kab'in, the ending of the word, the fold of the Katun. That is a flood, which will be the ending of the word of the Katun. And that's what he has to say about that.
Hmm.
So I can't add more to that.
No, but
as I have looked at this, there is something in the numbers that would lead me to believe that there is something, that this is the end of a cycle.
Hmm.
I can't explain it better than that. I'd be bullshitting if I did. So.
Hmm.
This goes back to the reason why we'd like to map this out in a proper way to ensure that that end date is fundamentally accurate, because one of the key issues is the start date that we're working with accurate.
Right,
and
right.
Based on our discussions that that Lauren and I have had, we both agree that the way they've calculated the start date is a bunch of bogus, and that's sort of back to that food fight that he was mentioning earlier, where they were all jockeying for position academically, right? You know, who is going to be accredited with this, that, and the other thing moving forward, so-and-so, and blah, blah, blah.
Here's something that we should think about, and that is this. In the stories that the Anunnaki... In those Sumerian stories, it tells us that they were displeased with what was going on here. And contrary to what our religious texts tell us, that it was our fault that we were making too much noise and disturbing these guys, it was what they were doing that was disturbing things and creating giants and monsters that were creating all this problem. But to get rid of the problem, they were going to let the human beings die in a flood that would occur when Nibiru returned. They knew the great inertia, the great gravitational pull of Nibiru when it came through was going to pull the ice sheets off the poles, and there was going to be a great flood, and they decided that they would not tell the human beings. And of course, we know from those stories that Enki did divulge to Utnapishtim that this was going to occur and how he might avoid it and like that. So when I see these numbers doing what they're doing, and it bring me back to this if I wander away from it for a moment. Mm-hmm. But when I see what these numbers are doing, it would lead me to believe that, yes, there is something cyclic about this, and it could be devastating. For example, if you take some of these numbers and do that reduction theory on them, I would stop generally at one day because I couldn't go any farther than one day. And I would find out that I could not do more than 13 reductions on one of these numbers without getting to less than one day. So I would stop there and it would always be 13 or less, but never more than 13. Mm. And I wondered, how can that be? But then I went back and I thought, well, okay, let's see what this reduction would look like. And so I did it from that on down, and I realized that that from a 24-hour day, you're going to have a 12-hour day, 6 hours of daylight and 6 hours of darkness. And then the next day, you're going to have a 6-hour day, 3 hours of light and 3 hours of darkness. And so I thought, well, wait a minute. How could you have 3 hours of light and of darkness? Either the sun is not holding you in, mm-hmm. or you have flown out of orbit and you're getting farther away from the sun. And of course, it reduces very quickly to, 15 minutes and then 15 seconds and you're out there in space. Mm. So either we are out of orbit and not in the gravitational pull of the sun, or the sun has collapsed and it no longer exercises a gravitational pull. So seeing what these numbers mean is difficult for me to comprehend. I want to be honest about this, tell everybody what I can, but not make anything up. I'm not in this to sensationalize anything. This is for everyone to be their own best judge about it. You can decide what to believe and what not to believe, but not to be informed, that's a sin.
Yeah, it is. It is almost a crime in today's society. You were forgiven in the old days, but today, ignorance is a choice.
Well, they are making us ignorant. They are dumbing us down with all this.
It's true, but we have access to information now that wasn't possible before. So at any given, I'm choosing to be ignorant about, let's say, weaving, because I know nothing about it and I'm not exploring it. But then I don't pretend to be an expert about it either, right? Problem today is people talk out of their asses. They think they're expert. They think opinions are facts. And they choose...
Are you talking about weaving?
No, that was just an example. But you were talking about planets, right? And
yes.
By the way, when you say Nibiru, it sounds to me you're suggesting that may be... I mean, there would probably be earthquake provoked by something like Nibiru approaching, right? So a meteorite, a heavenly body, that's a common outcome. But in your list of planetary data, just a heads up here, you should add there's one planet which is glimmering with its absence. Can you guess which one?
No.
And you even have Eris here, so... you should. Are you familiar with the Titus Bode law?
No.
Speaking of number symmetry,
No.
Well, the Titus Boudelot is brilliant. It was a mystical-minded scientist 100 years ago who came up. Well, there were two of them. It was Titus and it was Bode. I don't know how you say it in English. And they found out you could calculate the harmonic distance from the sun for every planet. They came
yes,
up.
Yes, yes.
You know this algorithm, right?
Yes.
And according to this, this is actually how they discovered some of the outermost planets, like Neptune, I think, and maybe Pluto too. But the interesting thing is, according to this system, there should be a planet between Mars and Jupiter. And indeed, there is a planet there, because according to Dr. Tom Van Flandern, it exploded millions of years ago, and the biggest chunk of it,
yes,
it's the asteroid belt, right? And the biggest chunk is what they called Ceres, I think.
Yes.
So I believe you should have that in, because
the biggest chunk of it, that was Tiamat, and the biggest chunk of it is us.
Oh, wow, really? Okay, so you think the Earth comes out of the asteroid belt, it's connected.
Well, according to the testimony that we have, this interpretation could be wrong, but it looks as though one of the moons, or the what they call the wristband or the bracelet, mm-hmm, of Nibiru, whacked Tiamat, and half of that became the asteroid belt, and the other half of that was flung over here into that we are the other half of that planet.
Right.
That
interesting.
That is the best information I have on that. But I'm not really an expert on that ancient lore. I'm very interested in these texts, because we need to look at these texts, but they have been so poorly interpreted. The people who did the interpretation have imposed their own paradigm on what could be possible and really dumbed down the text for us. So I'm upset about that. And I'm upset that when I can't go and find these extra these excellent authors like Alan Wilson and Baron Blackett, these guys have written a ton of Moses and the Hieroglyphs. The volumes these guys have produced is extraordinary. People should read their work. It's another history of the world. I don't know what I can say, but I've learned a whole lot about the peopling of the Isles and who did that and what they were up to and how that is at work in our world today.
Mm. Okay, so let me ask you this then. Someone who is so well-studied and knowledgeable as you, Lauren, surely you must have tried to compare the Mayan calendar system with other ancient systems like the Greek or the Indian.
Yes.
So what is your verdict of that?
Well, let me tell you. I have come to the opinion that this 260-day calendar is a totally an American convention. I believe that the long count, however, is an adaptation of the 12 signs of the zodiac from Sumeria.
Right.
This concept, when they found out that we are receding 1 degree each 72 years through the zodiac, they were able to calculate 360 degrees and find out that was 25,920 years, which is, again, that 80-year difference there from 25,920 years. But you can take that figure, 30 divided into 360 12 divided into 360 gives you 30 degrees. So they knew they were able to calculate what two houses were, what three, what four. And when you start calculating that, again, you run into this thing. Well, that's 13 days away from the revolution of Saturn. Hey, this is 13 more days than the synodical cycle of... anyway, and so, and you get these numbers that like you get 864,000. And of course, I reckon that to be 865 and 358, I think maybe. Is that the diameter of the sun? A 1,000 miles off, or 100 miles off, or 0.25, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like just throw a quarter of a day in there and you'll fool these monkeys. They'll forget about it and go home.
but the question was, will you say that, for example, the Greek or the Indian system is unveiling aspects of the same divine algorithm as the Mayan did?
Well, to the degree, we know that the Sumerians were here, and so I can account for the adoption of the 12 houses of the zodiac in the 360-degree calendar as a convention from the old world, which I believe...
So before the Sumerian came, they didn't have it?
I am nobody to say that they didn't, but since I can prove they were here,
right.
And that they did not have the 260-day calendar, I can see they were using the 12 houses and the 360 degrees. And making that jump, you see, like 2 years would be 730 days. But if you took that 72 years to move 1 degree, then you're in the fractal of 12. The cartoon goes from 1 year, one ton at 365 days, when they amended that to 360 days, then 2 years could be 720 days. And then you're in the fractal of 72 years.
Mm.
And so by making that adjustment, they were able to bring the precession of the equinox under the same tint as the year and the day. So that is a convention to bring all three together in one mathematical calculation. And they weren't concerned. Well, that 5 days was just a pain in the ass anyway. And we got the 13-day ceremony to take care of the fractions. So we're just fine with 360 days. We don't need to think about them. Well, they didn't. But we do if we're going to do an accurate equivalency computation.
Okay, so if you manage to do, if you get Cliff on board or something to generate this, you should be managed to superimpose other calendar systems onto this then. Of course, the one we use today, but also the Eastern one, right?
Al, one more thing I wanted to mention to you.
Yeah?
You know ancient Baalbek?
I don't know it, but...
In Lebanon?
Right, yeah?
Well, according to Sitchin,
mm-hmm.
This was the launch pad for ships going to another world.
Right.
And Gilgamesh, because he was two-thirds Anunnaki, he wanted to be immortal too. And so he went to his mother and said, you know, hey, I want some of this immortality. And she said, well, you would have to go to our home planet to do that. So that's what his great impetus to go to the Cedars of Lebanon were. It wasn't the cedars that he wanted. He wanted a passage on a spaceship.
Right.
And when he went up there, he tore the place up. And, of course, that didn't bode well. They took the life of his friend and like that. But that you know what Baalbek is? You know another name for Baalbek?
No.
Heliopolis.
Ah.
The Greeks got their knowledge directly from the Sumerians.
Right.
They are an outgrowth of that school of wisdom, and likewise are the Egyptians.
Yeah, but could you and Stacy, do you have the competence to, if you manage to get this into a database, could you superimpose the Indian calendar and the ancient Greek calendar to harmonize it with the Mayan? Is that possible? Do we have enough knowledge to...
Well, I haven't looked at those calendars. I couldn't no. say.
Well,
no.
Okay.
No, but it's data, right? And so that data has to be pegged to...
Yeah.
To
but I know this.
Phenomena, right? And once we do it for the Maya, all these things will start to appear if they're there.
Exactly.
This is the beauty of the this is the beauty of doing this project.
Appeared here 500 to 1,000 years before it appeared in India. And 1,500 years before it appeared in Europe.
What was that?
the zero.
Oh, the zero, yeah. You have a chapter about the importance of the zero.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Stacy talked a little about that. But what you didn't address, I think, was the Stones of Destiny. I think we went off on a detour there.
You want me to talk about the Stones of Destiny?
Yes, please. Complete that thread.
This is key to our understanding right now. If such a thing exists, and there are signs is telling us that it does, this, you know, the DOD has just taken this over, and it's hush-hush, and we don't know what they have found and what kind of technologies they are developing and using. The Department of Defense has first crack at it. But the technology for energy is there. These people had it. They tell us all about it. Mm. And the medical aspects of it are phenomenal.
Mm. Okay. So it's advanced technology that can be used destructively or constructively?
Well, I'm sure they're investigating, you know, weaponizing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. By the way, you mentioned the 72 system. It just struck me that we're talking about tarot, right? So if you add, you know, the four suits, I think you call it in English, the four elements, if you add to that the major arcana, the 21 base cards, then you get 72. Wait a minute, isn't it 73? No, because the fool is zero and shouldn't be counted. So the fool is like the jokers, right? The jokers in the ordinary card system. So you get 72.
Wonderful.
When you have the tarot. If you only have the playing cards, then it's 52.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Right? I know. That's why I mentioned it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway.
If you were going to have a crew of people here taking care of things, a game using that system would familiarize you with how things work here. And there are probably other tricks that you haven't described that are a part of that system.
Oh, indeed. Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. I mean, we could talk forever about these things, right?
I mean, what you just said about you don't count the zero because that's not a number. And
exactly.
And that is a great excuse from jumping from 73 to 72. You get to use this 12-ordered system. And
but it's the same all over. For example, if you want to reduce the number 360 to its root number, it's 3 + 6 + 0, right? So that's 9. So then you know 360 is related to the cycle of 9. But it's the same there. Why didn't you include a 0? Because 0 is absence.
Mm-hmm.
And the fool, it's like, it's the same in the great key of Pythagoras. He talks about 10 dots, 10 points. But number 10 is the same as number 1. It's just a 0 after it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same principle starting to repeat itself with 10. So you really just have 9 arch numbers. But then you have 0 in addition as like a standalone or an extra. But you can't discount it and say we can't include it. Because then we can't get to 10. Because 10 is 1 plus 0. So it belongs there and it doesn't belong there. It's weird. It's hard to explain. But you know what I mean.
Yes, some of these things are hard to wrap your mind around.
Actually, that's something that I've been playing with when I've been creating a new calendar tool, if you will. And I put 0 in there alongside 1 to 20. So 0 to 19 versus 1 to 20. I put them side by side because, well, I don't know the mystery. And so it's important to put them there so people can play with it. And that's something that Lauren and I have kind of argued a little bit about. But basically, I just put it in there so that people can play with it at least and start coming up with their own mathematics and playing with it and then seeing how it points out different things. Because if you don't play with it, you can't really figure out what it is.
Where did you do this?
Oh, it's in a tool that I've made available on mysticsofthemaya.com. Essentially, you can download it and play with this tool. And it's just a recreation of the popular Zolkien calendar that's been passed around for a long time, but sort of tries to, one, get closer to the indigenous meanings behind the symbols and the math, injecting more authentic indigenous concepts into it,
Because, you know, anybody who's familiar with the Mayan calendar from the 2012 era, they're probably familiar with Jose Arguelles, for instance.
Yeah.
And Jose did a little bit, or tried a little bit, to reconcile a variety of calendars around the world into one syncopated rhythm, but he was working with the wrong start date.
Exactly. I don't trust his data.
He also followed the academic mishap that Lauren identified, and so on. So you can basically toss it out. But the methodology, the tool that was created and passed around is still valuable if you can get on to the right...
The principle, yes.
Yeah, if you can get on to the right right rhythm, then it's the key. Right, to time.
But that's the same we talked about, this British guy, what's his name? Maurice Cotterell, yeah. Remember? It's the same situation there.
Yeah, Cotterell, yeah.
He may have his data wrong, but the principle may be right.
Sure, and I give more credit to Cotterell. I mean, Arguelles was a guru. He wanted to be a guru. He wanted to be known for doing something really new agey and stuff. And I mean, he did his harmonic convergence in 87, which was very successful, and that was his launch point. Mm. And then he seized onto the Mayan calendar and called himself a shaman, so you got to run, right? Just like Lauren said. Mm. But unsuspecting, naive people, which is essentially the whole world in relation to this calendar system, they got duped, right? Mm. The whole world was duped. It was a big con.
Hyped.
Everybody jumped on, and a lot of ad dollars were made, but not much else.
Mm.
And, you know, and so even though it's supposedly past its expiration date, you know, when I talk to the average person, they say, why do I care about the Mayan calendar? Well, you care because, you know, you're basically adrift in time. And if we don't get that sorted out, we are going to end up on timeline two, so to speak, where the catastrophe is.
Just to be able to, just a mind-blowing concept of being able to determine when we are in existence. Is
that's a really good way to say it. Yeah. When are we in? Yeah, when are we exactly?
Yeah,
as opposed to where.
and that's why I also asked about where, right? I want to know both, but I mean the masculine and the feminine.
Well, they go hand in hand.
They do. I know they do.
They go hand in hand.
That's why you never can travel in space without also traveling in time. People tend to forget that.
But going back to the concept of zero and why it's so important, it's not that it's important in the sense of its concept. What's really striking is that the concept of zero enters the Mayan system 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't even know, like 5, maybe 10, maybe 15, 20,000 years before so-called Western European.
Hang on, I don't buy into that because the Western has the same roots. It all goes back to the Atlantis.
Sure,
knew this,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure. So it's just, in terms of the,
it's just the eldest trace we're talking about here. But if we had the traces perfectly conserved, we would see a huge decline, of course, but a universal, all over the globe, there would be a decline, and some retained better. Like Sumerians were good at retaining info about astronomy and stuff like that. So they had different things they prioritized of conserving, but I believe it all went back to the common source.
I agree.
So to say this is older and this is younger is kind of a moot exercise.
We're just talking about the orthodox academic version of history, right? That's all we're talking about.
Yes, okay.
And it's just a keystone to, or a key to unlocking and cracking people out of that mental prison.
Mm.
Right. Is to say, hey, look, your idea of things about your hegemony, your intellectual hegemony over the world from this Eurocentric perspective is inaccurate. And then, of course, eventually you can come around to what you just described, which is that there's this primordial civilization that may or may not be indigenous to this planet. We don't know, you know, but what Lauren has uncovered is that the mathematics embedded in the calendar system of the Maya, the way it's been passed down to us as Mayan, is a keystone to when are we? Right? It's just brilliant.
Imagine the scientific breakthrough that could come just by knowing, identifying that little factoid.
See, you're starting to get it. You're starting to get it. Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, the things that would happen scientifically, probably even interdimensionally. You know?
I'll tell you, the first thing that happens is our space brothers will descend a la Star Trek and say, welcome to adulthood. Welcome to maturity.
Maybe. I think they'd have to see our behavior change drastically, right. Which is, I think, what we're dealing with right now, obviously.
Yeah, that's the problem, of course.
So we'll see.
Okay, gentlemen.
I don't think I'll be around when that happens.
No, maybe none of us will be. But I'll tell you, this show will be around. So you future if we survive and the year is 2086, remember where you heard it first. Mm-hmm. At Forum Borealis. And it was via Lauren Jeffries' excellent book, 200 pages packed with information and beautiful illustrations. How can people get it?
Mysticsofthemaya.com.
Oh, really?
There you go. Talk to the guy sitting beside you there. Oh, no, he's not beside you.
Virtually, he is.
Yeah, mysticsofthemaya.com. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and there's more episodes of Lauren and I speaking about all of this and his book and just many other things on that website as well. So for people who want to hear more of what Lauren has to say, simply go to mysticsofthemaya.com and click on the sacred calendar and look at the content there. Yeah, so that's where you can get it.
You don't have a website yourself, Lauren?
No. I don't think I do.
Have you written articles? Surely you must have written articles.
You can find some of my work at precontact.org, the Indigenous Peoples Research Foundation. I also have a interpretation of a Mixtec codex on YouTube.
Actually, you can find a PDF, a brief PDF on why the 2012 date doesn't work. Right, Lauren? You can look up how do they search for that? Actually, that's how I found Lauren.
Oh, wow.
Was by searching up 2012 and people who had contradictory evidence to the system, and came across that short PDF. I think it's a 2 or 3 pager, and it really summarizes in succinct fashion why this 2012 date is a bunch of BS, and not only why it's a bunch of BS, but exactly why. Not just theoretical, but mathematically. And then that's what led me to look for him and try and reach out to him just over a year ago or about a year and a half ago now. And so you can look for that. And there is a codex. What codex was it? That was the Aztec codex or one of the Aztec codex. Which one was it?
That is a Mixtec codex.
Oh, Mixtec, right. That was a Mixtec codex.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. So, your book, Lawrence W. Jeffrey, The Sacred Count, The Fractal Calendar of Ancient Mesoamerica, that you can get at the website.
Mysticsofthemaya.com. Yeah, mysticsofthemaya.com. That's where we've created a nice place for Lauren's work to live. And there's other conversations that Lauren and I have had there that are available, hours of conversations that you can go through, which get somewhat into the math. We've taken an approach of going through each chapter one at a time. We've only done 3 so far, so there's lots to do. But Lauren's also been working on his second book, so, you know, and I've been building the site. So it's
Last question. Last question now to Lauren is about the second book. But complete your reasoning.
No, I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. I was just trying to tell people that there's a lot of content there, not just buy the book, but come over and listen to more of what Lauren has to say.
Indeed. Maybe even a web shop connected to Forum Borealis eventually.
We'll see. We'll see what happens with your friend, let's say.
Okay.
Let's see if he comes around.
But Lauren, in closing, Lauren, could you answer that, address that?
About the present book?
Yes, your second book.
In the first book there, I was trying to explain how this calendar works, what they're really doing with it. And I discovered so many things in doing it that just exploded the subject. And so I had to investigate the solar system and the other planets and find out what's really going on. And what I've discovered is I can't believe that this was all my world that nobody else wants to play because there is a world of information there, and it's really going to explode things when I unleash it, if I can get it unleashed. The present book is about our solar system and the pi and phi. And the things that the Greeks tried to tell us about mathematics. It's also got music theory and frequencies. And this is
so there'll be some Bach in
application
there.
Everywhere. So
beautiful.
It's going to change things.
Right. I didn't quite catch the follow-up book, what that's on.
The follow-up is the solar system and how the solar system is comported with this calendar.
I thought that was the first book, because certainly that's a subject here too.
Well, the first book was principally explaining the calendar.
Oh, okay.
But the second book explains how the solar system is comporting with this, and how the size of the Earth and the speed we're going, and
okay, now I get it.
All these things are part of this number system.
Right.
There are those aspects in the first book, but they're kind of, you know, in brief, right?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, look, point. Well, then,
exactly.
You know, the rabbit hole goes pretty deep, I'm finding. So
he's basically just digging up more of the rabbit hole in part two, then.
Yeah.
The consequences of the first book.
Yeah, and explaining, it sounds like it's explaining how, but not only how and what, but why. Am I right, Lauren?
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still digging. I don't know the answer. Why.
The why is a big one, Lauren.
But my idea is that the more information that can be spread around, the better off we'll all be.
Oh, I'm into that.
I can't explain the why of it, but I can tell you what's going on.
Good to know. Excellent. So time just flies. I know it feels like we almost just begun, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at the time, we've gone for 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Well, no kidding. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. I had a feeling all the time that we're just dancing around the introduction. We're going to get to the meat now. We're going to get to the meat, but we have to get there by meticulously one step after another, right? And that... Bam. And then time, some kind of, we must live in a simulation, because it's, what do they call it in abductees when you, time lapse, that's the word.
Yeah.
It's been a time lapse.
Yeah, they have missing time. They have missing time.
Or like you say, time out of, hours out of time, is that what you say in a Mayan calendar? Days out of time.
Days out of time. That's an Arguelles invention, but yeah, basically.
Okay, minutes out of time.
Well, basically, the concept there was he was trying to reconcile these days that were thrown out and include them in the calendar, but he completely fucked up the whole thing. So he just called them days out of time, and he went with the whole religious connotation as opposed to the mathematical relevance of it.
That's helpful.
Well, it's an important distinction, right? I mean, he's trying to reconcile these things, but he has absolutely no idea what he's dealing with. And he doesn't have the background and understanding that Lauren has, and so he just makes up shit and throws it in.
Right.
And everybody goes, ooh, mystical, ooh, groovy, you know? and then it becomes, a phenomena, a cultural phenomena, and people buy into it because, well, they don't know either. And they figure, this guy must know.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
He's the one who brought it to me. And I was in the same boat for a while until I wised up.
Yeah.
Didn't take me too long to wise up. It happened long before 2012. But by the time 2012 came along, I was kind of one of those people standing at the edge of a cliff telling people not to run off the cliff. but here we are in the same position all over the world. Now it's a worldwide thing, and everything is life and death, and it's all, man, things have gone bad. Mm. So who knows? I mean, hopefully we'll survive, and good people will survive, and some of this good information won't just get lost in the wilderness of the future.
Yeah, especially because...
Did we cover everything you wanted to, Al?
What's that?
Or you want to say this again?
Yeah, I think we need a follow-up at some point, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you could literally tap Lauren for days and days and days, literally.
I know.
Yeah, and I could, too, but I've been so busy, and he's been so busy, so it's like, okay.
Lauren, let's do 3 more hours when your second book is out.
Okay.
Is it far ahead, or how is it looking?
That might be never. I don't know whether I can get all that work done. I've got it written. I just need to word process it, but I'm...
Oh, really?
I can't do it. Yeah.
Well, that shouldn't be. Well, it's if you have it written, well, then it will come. But you could also like publish some of it.
This is the thing. This is why we need to push the sales of his book, so we can put some money in his pocket, so he can hire somebody to type it out. Those kinds of things, right? I mean, this is
Right.
You know, time is of the essence. His health is, sorry to say it, Lauren, but your health isn't that great, as we know.
No, but what if people volunteer? What if we do a little appeal here now, if someone want to help out?
Yes, in fact, that's perfect, because there's a Patreon account waiting to be exploited, but I haven't really driven any traffic towards it. But the project there is to facilitate and help Lauren get not only a second book done, but to create this software program that we're talking about.
Right, with Cliff.
I want to make it a public project. He has some reservations about that, but I think this is an important step, is that we got to crowdsource some of the work, right?
One reservation, obviously, would be that you guys want to survive, right? I mean, the deep states have 6 ways to Sunday to take you out. So.
No, that's not the reservation. The reservation is, I don't know what the reservation is, to be honest. That's another discussion. But there is a reservation on making it a public project. I don't think that's a problem. I think that's a good thing, because Then we can work it out faster and we can get people submitting their money and their time to it. That's what I want to do on the Patreon.
So people can either donate, or if someone want to contribute to doing this,
if they have this skill set, things like that. I mean, it'll all have to go through Lauren. Like, he'll have to approve the person, but they can submit their proposal for help, through the Patreon account, which I think is an ideal place, because then people can just donate money and sort of track how the project develops. And there's 2 things to that, and that is getting Lauren some support for the finishing of his second book, and also the creation of this software program, which, you know.
And you get to read free samples of the book. That's not bad.
Well, that's up to Lauren. But yeah, I mean, obviously.
If you're going to help, if you proofread, obviously
exactly.
You do, right?
Yeah, exactly. So anything that we can do to facilitate that is my intention there. And so it's up to Lauren if he wants to do it. But that's the idea that I have with the Patreon account, and what I'd like to do there in terms of making it a public project is really just to crowdsource the energy required and the work required to finish these things. Is that all right, Lauren?
Is what all right?
You want to add something to what Stacey said? We are giving an appeal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't see me putting my only copy of this into an envelope and sending it to anyone. I don't know how to proceed here, but I really should do something, because my health is failing.
Mm-hmm. This is the issue.
I don't think you should send a manuscript. I'm thinking about, let's say someone says, I volunteer to proofread a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could send in Word format.
Yeah, but this is the thing. He can't type it out. This is the issue, right? So to get it typed out,
right?
You know, he needs somebody to literally sit next to him, I think.
Right.
You know, which is an extraordinary donation of time and energy. But I think there's that person out there.
Poor bastard. Let's better pay him. Let's have a donation.
That's my point, right? Yeah, so we go and we raise funds at the Patreon account, and that's what we do. We hire somebody to go and sit next to him and type it out and give him a little extra assistance, right?
Put a specific goal, money goal. I mean, this isn't an unlimited expense.
Patreon isn't crowdfunding, so. But Patreon is a monthly. Right. So if we could hire somebody, and I don't know how big the book is, but let's say it's, 300-400 pages. Right. And when you have it written out in a manuscript, handwritten, I've looked at his handwriting. It's good.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
So it's not like it's going to be, we're not going to need a decryptor. so it's probably somebody who's adept at this and actually does this. If we hire them for, say, I don't know what it would cost to send them over there and sit down with him for a period of time. But let's say $3,000 a month for a couple months run up. It's certainly going to be enough to find somebody in
his
area. Do you have to
send someone? There should be someone in Kentucky with that expertise.
That's my point. There's going to be someone in his area that we can just say, hey, drive over on a daily or bi-weekly or whatever time frame Lauren wants to work with, that would allow that to happen. I think would be excellent acceleration. It certainly would make him happier and give him some company too, because he's kind of out there in the middle of nowhere. So those are my thoughts on it.
Right.
Well, it's certainly been nice to talk with both of you today.
Super.
Now there's so much that I want to talk with you about. I hope we get a chance to do this again soon.
Absolutely. Let's stay in touch. Let's not wait for the second book after all.
No.
Okay.
No, let's not wait.
Let's hook up when this show is out.
Yeah, okay. In a couple months or so.
Yeah.
But back to Lauren, I think that that Patreon thing, if that would be great, because that's already sitting there. It's ready. Like, I already had one subscriber come in, but obviously he disappeared because I wasn't doing anything with it and adding any content to it.
Plus, people need to see. People haven't heard. They don't know who Lauren is, what he's writing about. They need some identifiers.
Exactly. So it's just been ready. It's just basically ready.
What about publishing just a chapter as a teaser? So that people know what they're dealing with here. I think that's a good market strategy.
Well, he's got his first book already. So,
that's
you know, they can just pick up his first book as a cost of entry, and that gives us some money to play with in terms of getting somebody out there. Yeah.
Okay, I hope something will materialize in that direction, Lauren, with this show.
Yes, indeed.
Good idea. It will. It's just going to take some time, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Lawrence V. Jeffries, everyone, and backed up by Stacey James Fry. Thank you, gentlemen, for doing the show with me today.
Yeah, thanks. It's been great.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Look forward to coming out. And everybody, please go to mysticsofthemaya.com and get a little more familiar with Lauren's work and pick up his book.
Great.
Okay, guys.
All right.
I'm off for today, then.
Okay. Talk to you soon, Lauren.
Sure.
Keep in touch.
Okay.
Sure.
Fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah, okay. Have a great day now.
Yeah, thanks, Al.
Bye.
All right. Ciao for now.
And that's our show. I will now share some quotes with you right after I remind you that we have ceased announcing shows at social media. Some of you have been used to that, like our Facebook page or whatever, YouTube community page, even Instagram, but no. Although we do still use Patreon, where we announce new releases to our website subscribers. You'll find those releases and all public releases at our website, at the front page of our website, as a matter of fact. But in addition to that, you can either join our news mail. You'll not get spammed. It's going to be a mail a month, just listing releases of various types. Or simply join our Telegram page, of which link you can find at our website, forumborealis.net. And you'll get all updates in real time. Both concerning public releases and for subscribers to our website. And to become a subscriber to our website, you simply sign up and then you donate whatever you want. If you have means, don't be cheap. If you're poor, as little as a dollar. We also accept crypto. In fact, we especially prefer crypto. Now, sometimes it happens, occasionally it happens that some people have trouble accessing our website. Usually it's because they haven't followed the instructions. That's just how it is. I understand people don't want to read the instructions, but at least if you have a problem, then you should check the instructions first. It's not complicated. It's three simple steps. Now, if that doesn't work, of course, contact us, but be mindful that I'm not reading mails. People write us, we're overwhelmed with mails actually, but people think, oh, everyone's addressing me as if I don't have anything other to do than corresponding with people. I wouldn't even be able to produce the few shows we do manage to do if I had to bother with payment stuff and subscribers and all that. So be mindful that I have a team of volunteers and we're not professionals. They're not sitting there around the clock getting paid for putting up with so angry mails because something is wrong just isn't appropriate. They will probably, it can be frustrating having to wait maybe up to a week or 10 days before a new application to our website is accepted. But as soon as they do get around to it, they will get to it. And look, don't donate if you don't think we deserve it. It has happened a handful of times. People have demanded their donation back. And usually they use PayPal and that then we have to pay. So if you want to bankrupt us, you donate many times and large amounts and then you demand them back and we end up going in minus. Of course, that's not the intention of those who does it, but it's a brilliant ploy for the deep state to take us down. You hear? But all I'm saying is be patient and they will get around to you when they can. And in those few cases where you have to wait, usually it takes a day, two, three. But be patient, if not, because my team is doing the best they can. Now, inspired by Lauren's visit, I have gathered some adages, quotes, and words of wisdom from across Native American tribes. Let's enjoy and ponder them together. When a child, my mother taught me the legends of our people, taught me of the sun and sky, the moon and stars, the clouds and storms. She also taught me to kneel and pray to the Great Spirit for strength, health, wisdom, and protection. The Great Spirit is in all things. He is in the air we breathe. The Great Spirit is our Father, but the earth is our Mother. She nourishes us. That which we put into the ground, she returns to us. Regard heaven as your Father, earth as your Mother, and all things as your brothers and sisters. Honor the sacred, honor the earth, our mother, honor the elders, honor all with whom we share the earth, four-leggeds, two-leggeds, winged ones, swimmers, crawlers, plant and rock people, walk in balance and beauty. When you were born, you cried and the world rejoiced. Live your life so that when you die, the world cries and you rejoice. We will be known forever by the tracks we leave. If we wander often, the gift of knowledge will come. If a man is as wise as a serpent, he can afford to be as harmless as a dove. It is not good enough to cry peace. We must act peace, live peace, and live in peace. When a man moves away from nature, his heart becomes hard. A people without a history is like the wind over buffalo grass. When the earth is sick, the animals will begin to disappear. When that happens, the warriors of the rainbow will come to save them. And we've reached the top of the hour. Thanks again to Lauren and Stacey, and thanks to you for supporting the forum. For that reason, I've been your host, Al, reminding you that when people ignore history, we have no past and no future. Be seeing you.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.